Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Universal Energy Radio. This is the Lois Effect. My name is Alisa, and right now I am the only person doing this show. Liz is out doing work things, and I actually texted my cousin Anna, who I thought was going to be able to co-host. So we'll see if she gets it. She's in a different time zone. But something just told me, let's just go ahead and do the show. And if that means me talking for an hour, well, that will be a first time to do it. We changed the name of the show last year to The Lois Effect. And part of it is this, it's this presence of my mentor, Lois, who I know Liz gets to channel. But since obviously Liz is not going to be on the show today, and I don't channel, as far as I know, I figured I would go ahead and maybe talk a little bit more about things that Lois has been able to do or had an influence on in my life. And I know I've already done a little bit of that just in us talking about changing the format of the show and the name of the show. I had a call yesterday or a conversation with one of my fellow students who studied under Lois. She actually studied a little bit later than I did, in part because I told her about Lois and decided to take a class or two. I think she actually did the whole program, which was basically a healing program, like a 12-step healing program. And so we reconnected last night. She's reaching a milestone year this year for her birthday. And, she has just kind of been in a state of observation, and definitely it's been affecting her, seeing so many of her relatives and friends, it's just like they're just transitioning. It's time for them to move on, whether that means passing on to the next life or moving away. And she is she's been divorced for a long time, has one child who is grown up now, is in a relationship. I think she's married now, but they are not planning on having kids. So there's a sense for her that it's time for a change, and from what I got, it's just this bittersweet feeling of not having, I guess, her world be what I guess maybe she thought it was going to be or what she was used to, and definitely not what she had growing up. She's lost both parents, and she told me last night that, she said our parents are of that generation that kind of kept everything together. And when they passed on, she said, I didn't think of how that was going to change, the way my family life would be. And it really changed it tremendously. But I guess she also doesn't have a huge family. So and that's something that's very different for me. I have a lot of relatives just on one side of the family, as a matter of fact. But she has been in this at this crossroads. Like, do I need to stay? Do I need to pick up and go? And if I do, is it worth the effort to do all that? Because she said, well, down the road, she's had friends who are younger than she is pick up and go and move someplace, and it was good for a couple of years, and then all this other stuff would happen. She even mentioned Lois, our friend Lois, who said, Lois did the same thing. She moved for her husband. Her husband is a lot older and had mobility issues. So the main reason why they ended up moving, they were already planning on moving at least to a new house, and they couldn't find a house in the Atlanta area that was just one level because of his mobility issues. They had an upstairs, downstairs house, and he couldn't go down those stairs anymore. They had a beautiful home. So they just couldn't find something that was in the area they wanted to be in. Honestly, you know, single level homes in Atlanta are very rare. And if they are around, they're a lot smaller. And these people lived in the house that was pretty big and had lived in that same house for a good number of years. So they ended up moving to Sarasota because they had visited it before and they had both agreed that that was a place they thought they could live in. So here they go moving. And she, Lois, had a really rough time with that move. It was harder for her than she thought it was going to be. And the process of packing up really brought up a lot of stuff for her. So she had a lot of anxiety in this particular transition from Atlanta to Sarasota. And also having to establish a new base in Sarasota, whereas she had a very strong spiritual community that she was a big part of. So a lot of things were changing for her. And so I understand why my friend brought this up because Lois did about 2 years there before she, I think it's basically she had a stroke and then, and then she ended up passing on very unexpectedly. Her husband, who is now in his mid-90s, still around and could not stay in Sarasota on his own. So he's back in Michigan. Our life trajectories tend to change at any given moment, really. And so I had my conversation with her and just listening with her, there's a lot of uncertainty. And I know she knows that going through any of these changes, she'll be fine. I think it's just a matter of, how much effort does she want to put into uprooting. And so she is just looking for a bit of guidance on, what to do. And part of it is just really laying out these different thoughts that are in her head. There's definitely a pattern there. And I don't know if I'm the one to show her all that, just as a friend, really, because I think she is used to having, maybe someone who has a different life experience than I do. But it was just good to talk to her. And I did mention some other people, both local and maybe not so local, including my friend Liz, our wonderful co-host, to see if that's something that they can have a discussion with and maybe she can get some insight onto, really bringing up not only what she wants to do, because I actually think she's answered it, but being able to look forward to what's next in her life. And I think that's a big theme for people, no matter where you are in your life, but I think especially for people who are a lot older. For example, my dad's birthday is tomorrow, and he turns 81. And probably within the next week to 2 weeks, he will be a grandfather for the first time. So these are kind of these life milestones that you think people have already gone through it. And or at this age, you should have already, had that experience. But life happens in different ways for different people. And telling my friend this, I didn't realize until afterwards because, she's just asking me how I'm doing. She will not be having any grandkids. Her daughter is not planning on having kids. And so she just sort of, I think it's this feeling of if you have nothing to look forward to, then where is your focus? And I've seen that with other people. So people who are my parents' age who aren't doing anything at all that really fills their soul with joy, or something that gives them this feeling of, wow, I have a lot to live for. Like, I think that's an interesting phrase. You have so much more to live for. And when you are in your, apparently 60s, 70s, 80s, there is definitely that looking forward in a different way, like, well, you know, this body can't do all the things it used to do. And, you know, a lot of my friends and family that I would normally hang out with, they're no longer here. And, you know, there could be a heaviness to that, and understandably so. I mean, I'll be honest in saying that, you know, I think my biggest fears have been about my parents in particular, you know, just family in general, and seeing, you know, what have we created here, and what, you know, the things that I guess we saw growing up, just like my friend was talking about, the things that she saw growing up, she doesn't have that necessarily anymore. And I would venture to say she technically has it, but are all the pieces are there, maybe not as many as far as she can tell, but because, you know, she doesn't have her parents and those kinds of things, but the transitioning to not just adulthood, because obviously there's a long stretch where you're an adult, but then when you are allegedly, you know, the end phase, or when you're noticing all the aches and pains, and you know you cannot sustain the sort of life and activities that you used to do, you know, how do you handle that? I guess technically I'm in midlife if I assume that I'm going to be here till, you know, late 90s, hundreds. And this has been an interesting thing, because there are people who think, oh yeah, I want to live a long life. But there are lots of people who say, I want to live a good life. And so I want to be able to travel as long as I can. Like my parents, like I said, they're in their early 80s, and you know, every year there's just like another thing that, like, well, we're limited in, like, we can go on this trip, but we can't go doing all these really crazy excursions, because if we need to hike, that's not going to happen. Honestly, I don't think they would have liked to hike at any point in their lives. But, you know, maybe close to 20 years ago, 18 years ago, I took a trip to Europe for the first time with my mom and her sister. And my mom was so excited, because one of the stops on this trip, and it was not a cruise, it was a bus tour, was to Switzerland. And she had always wanted to go to Switzerland. And she had always wanted to go, like, just be on top of a mountain in Switzerland. And sure enough, one of the excursions that we took was to, they didn't call it hiking, and it really wasn't, but there was a good little walk up a mountain, Stanzerhorn, so not Matterhorn, but Stanzerhorn. Now, here's the thing. My mom had just had arthroscopic surgery, and her doctor was a little hesitant to say, yeah, you should continue on this trip. But this trip she had planned for like the year before, and got postponed because of 9/11. So she was not going to have to, she didn't want to wait another, you know, year or however many months. She wanted to go. And, you know, my mom's determined, she's going to do it. So that was the beginning of a lot of her knee issues, or the afterwards of getting something done with her knee, and then traveling. And, you know, she was still wanting to lift her own luggage and all that stuff. And so that started, you know, that mentality of, don't treat me like I can't do it, or like I'm an invalid, because I can, just my knee hurts a lot, you know. But I remember that moment. I have to dig up my photos from that trip, because I took a ton of pictures on a regular camera, and I had this whole album. And I remember taking pictures of my mom, just this look on her face, being on top of this mountain in Switzerland, and just telling me this dream she'd had since she was a little kid of being in Switzerland. And here we were, you know, here we were basking in this. It was gorgeous. It was one of those where even a panoramic camera, because I think that was one of those options on this camera, was to take a panoramic, and just not even like a, like now with the digital where you're having to move. It's just like, well, it's a lens. It's as big as it can get. And that is going to be your panoramic shot. It just didn't do it justice, as any of you who go up here, you know, go up to these huge, amazing vistas, and you try to do that with your camera now, even as advanced as our iPhones or, you know, camera phones are, it's still not the same as being there and seeing everything that you can see, and just taking it all in. And to see my mom be so happy to kind of scratch off something on her bucket list, which I didn't even know about, you know. Now she has these bucket lists where, you know, we're on a around the world cruise for, you know, increasingly long, like longer parts of the year. I'm like, well, I don't know if I can do, you know, 4 months. I would love to. I would love to do a 4 month cruise. But now let's say, you know, I've got my niece coming, and I'm thinking, well, you know, that's going to change. I think how they travel, when they travel, because they might not want to miss, you know, a big holiday with their grandchild, you know, first Christmas or first Thanksgiving, which is typically when we tend to go on these large trips. So we shall see how these changes happen. But yeah, this is stuff that I've definitely thought about. I think it was just interesting to hear from a friend of mine who has, I think, been, I don't know, I won't say saddled with grief, but there's been a lot of loss. And how do you handle that? And I don't think it's necessarily how to handle a loss, the actual loss. I think it's the aftermath and the adjustment with everything in relation to whatever has transitioned on. And like I said, that's in the back of my mind, maybe not so in the back of my mind or a few years ago, but it's definitely been something to consider for me. Because again, our family unit is pretty tight. I think even now for me, I think my immediate family unit could be a lot closer. So built into that, there will be, there's always a sense of loss, like to have a brother that you haven't really talked to in a long time, and he's just not been part of the family. That's by his choice. You know, and so that is a big gap, you know, even for the birth of this new child. You know, he's going to have a niece that I think he knows is coming, but I'm not sure. So what happens? What happens when my parents transition? How do we get in touch with him? And then, you know, what is his response going to be? Is it going to be like, you know, has he grown so cold that there's like, well, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to be in touch. I don't know. So if you can feel the energy of this conversation, that's sort of how this conversation was last night with my friend. It was, you know, there wasn't anything to kind of change it or to try to change her. Right. Although that tends to be what I'm going to try to do, is to maybe not try to get you to flip over. Oh, it's going to be wonderful. But maybe to get to a more neutral mindset of, well, maybe it'll be a rough thing. Maybe it won't be. Because at any given point in your life, if you look at, oh, man, the highest highs, that was great. And then maybe 2 weeks later, you had something that was just as low or difficult. This is how our life patterns tend to be, or just how life happens. Like, you know, you look at it 10 years later and you saw how pivotal that difficult time was and how you grew from it. So we're still going to be growing even as we grow old, not just growing old, but we're still growing in our lessons in life and our understanding of who we are now. And that is crucial at these big junctures where we have the toughest parts of our lives, you know, our most difficult trials, whether that's, you know, something that leads up to a divorce and then the divorce itself and then the aftermath, or on a lesser scale, you know, like the big breakup or the potential of a relationship that, you know, just doesn't quite get there. And it's that feeling of, well, I think this is what I wanted, but actually this is not what I, you know, this is, this feeling is not what I want to sustain. And, you know, you can't really change the other person. You kind of wish you could, but then if you've ever been in a conversation, and I've been on both sides of this, where, you know, you have these conversations and either you end up saying something to the other person because you know that's what that person wants to hear and you're just kind of tired of talking about it. And then if you've been on the receiving end of that, where you know that person just said something because they were just saying that because they're just tired of talking about it. When you pick up on those things and you know because you've done it, it's not the truth, but it's part of the truth. The truth of it is, like, you're just tired of talking about it, or maybe you can't talk about it anymore, or you know you're not going to change, so, you know, or you feel justified in making the other person change. Whatever the case may be, that's like a big check-in point, because you can't change anybody else, and you don't live your life in a vacuum or on an island. Even if you think you are alone, you're not. Because I would say this, for example, my brother, who is estranged from the family, the oldest brother, he's not alone. I mean, I see him, but if he thinks about, you know, well, who is my true family, or who is my family, who can I depend on, he will have a different set of people. And that's by choice. But if he were to ever get in touch with us, and I know if he were to get in touch with my parents, and if he needed something, one, they would, you know, they would definitely welcome him and want to be in touch with him. Now, they may not give him everything he wants, depending on what he asked for, but he can always reach out. It's just the expectations are going to be a little different, but he's never going to be alone. And he's got this family, and not just his immediate family, but his extended family that all love him and would still want to hear from him. And, you know, to the degree that he wants to be in a relationship with us, he's got that. It's always going to be there. So even for people who, maybe not by choice, but, you know, but for people who have passed away, they're only as alone as they choose to be. And in these choices of being reclusive, I kind of feel like it's these different stages of being, you know, in a deep depression, where you kind of stay away and you don't have the energy to go out, but you miss contact with somebody who can understand you. It takes a lot to get out of that, and sometimes it's the stuff you don't say that. Other people may realize, you know, I haven't heard from so and so, and I think it does get more and more difficult. My friend last night was talking about how she was glad that I called back to answer a question that she had texted me. So here's the interesting thing. But to be fair, she's usually the one that gets in touch with me, and I tend to be that person. That I'm that friend that, if you get in touch with me, then that's cool. I may not always reach out to everybody else, which is, you know, it is what it is for me for right now. I spent years being in charge of a lot of big groups, so it's nice for me to take a break from that. But for my friend, we don't see each other very often. In fact, the last 2 years, I think I've seen her on my birthday, because I've just included her in my celebrations, and she lives kind of close by. but we don't see each other as close as she lives. We don't see each other very often. And so, you know, she was like, well, you know, we don't really see each other a lot. And it'd be nice to touch base more often than we do. And, but she said that most of the time her conversations with like her daughter and maybe her sister, I'm not sure how many other people, it's usually a text instead of a call. So I know she misses these conversations that we can have. But I also think she's not sure if people want to talk. I literally just talk on the phone. It was an interesting conversation. Different things that I picked up on may or may not be true, but it's just a type of feeling that I got. There's a heaviness to that, and you know, a bit of sadness, a bit of frustration. And this woman she's such a powerful person. So I was trying to match her up with some people that can handle that energy of just like they feel like all the pain and loss that she's felt and can help her transform that into I don't even know into what, but something that'll make it move forward so that it's not just stuck in a heaviness of, well, I can't do this, can't do that. And I did catch her a few times. I caught her with some things that I would say things that I know Lois would say, because she would say it a lot in our class. Like Lois was big on how you talk to yourself and what you say out loud. So her thing, if you said something that, like my friend last night, oh, she was to give me an example. Oh, well, kill me now. I'm like, ooh, you know, cancel, cancel. Lois would say cancel, cancel. It's got her laughing because Lois said it a lot. She had these classes where we would talk about things and people would say certain things and you know, like, oh, I was being an idiot, or I was really pissed off. You know, she's like, oh my gosh, cancel, cancel. You know, be aware of what you're saying, because you can still express what you need to say in a way that doesn't give your mind something to latch onto. So like in our example, and this may be an example that you all have heard before, someone who kept saying, or maybe a big phrase to say is, oh, I was just pissed off. You know, this person would eventually have like a bladder infection or something, you know, something would happen that would affect, you know, her body. And it's a big Louise Hay thing. She was huge into Louise Hay. And so your words, for affirmations are important, and your everyday words, which can become affirmations. So it depends on what words are you using? Are they limiting you? Are they hard words? I have a friend who would say something like, oh, let me just choke this down. Like talking about a meal. Let me just choke this down real quick and we'll go. Thinking, well, why wouldn't you want to enjoy what you're eating? why would you say that? It was very odd to say it. Those were some of the things that my cousin Anna would also, I'd catch her, either her or her partner at the time, I'd catch them saying stuff. And it was just because I was listening, and I was, you know, also been trained to keep an eye out on things and just say, oh, you know, is that what you meant? Did you mean to say that, you know, in you making a mistake, did you mean to call yourself an idiot? Is that true? You know, because the more you say it, that's what you're hearing. That's what other people are hearing. And even if it's meant to be very lighthearted, that's what people are remembering. So these key words, as we would use it now, these key words, you know, what is it? What are the words that make up who you think you are and how you present yourself? So Anna would kind of get on me about that. Like, well, why, you know, like, okay, I'll change it. And now she's really big on saying a lot of different things. Now she's big on never saying, you know, but like, oh, well, I like you, but blah, 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 blah. You know, like she's big on saying and instead of but. She will catch herself. And I notice her catching herself. So this whole thing, some will call it, some people that really get into it, get into NLP, neuro-linguistic language, I think is what it is, programming. Neuro-linguistic linguistic programming. I'm probably butchering all of that. But that how you say things are a big deal. And the words that you use carry a lot of power. So as you've heard, thoughts, like thoughts are things. And so your thoughts become words and then your words become actions, those types of things. That trajectory is what we're looking at. So as people tell their stories, as people who are a lot older, sometimes that's the stories, that's all they have. That's all they're used to saying. So they know the story really well, and you got a fresh audience, a fresh set of ears. And even people who call in on the show, by the time they get to us, when they're really feeling really rough about something or they just don't know, they're at a point where I don't know what to do, and they want to get into the story, which is so much a part of them because they've been talking about it for so long, to get them to move past that so it doesn't lock them in. And it moves them on to, like, well, what are like the bullet points? Because if you can narrow it down to that, that's something we can at least look at, but then we can let it go. And then, it's just to help clear space. Sometimes, like, I'm looking at different corners of my room where stuff is accumulated. I'm like, okay. So it's like decluttering. So if you tell the story once, it's out there. But you keep repeating the story. It starts to accumulate. I feel like that's a good image. It starts to accumulate in the corners of your mind. And then that tends to be like kind of like muscle memory, like, I need to tell this story in terms of who I am. And there are certain things that will always kind of be there, and you may, I don't want to say embellish, but you may add on to them another layer of depth, hopefully, not another layer of heaviness, but just something that goes a little deeper that has always been there, but you're looking at it. But we have different ways of expressing. We have all these words in our language to express, and we can put them together, and they can be the most uplifting. Like, so anybody who's heard, Oprah comes to mind, but all these big gurus like Anthony Robbins, anybody who has come through some major difficulty and can now talk about it in a way that is uplifting, because they're still living their life. You know, there's still things that they are experiencing, and this is what's got me here so far. Sometimes the most tragic of events and here's a joke that seems to be coming in. It's like Harry Potter, the most tragic of events. Look at all the stuff that happened with him. So these are like little humors that my guides are sort of throwing in there. Our best stories come from out of tragedy, out of overcoming some major obstacle, understanding something so much deeper within ourselves. And it can be a beacon of light to others. It can be that story, depending on how you tell it, and depending on the other person, your audience, if they're ready to hear that. There are a lot of people that I could probably talk about or refer to, like for my friend who was just, wanted to get a reading, but I know it wasn't just like going to a psychic fair getting a reading. Like, I feel like she really needs to talk to somebody who can help her, one, to kind of empathize maybe with where she is in her life, and to either help her release stuff that's holding her back, and to let her see what else could she be creating with this wonderful, powerful mind that she has. And she has a very dry sense of humor, which I can appreciate. I feel like I can have a dry sense of humor too. Then there's also a time when it needs to be lightened. It just needs to, it doesn't need to be so dry. And I've caught myself over the years. I used to be incredibly sarcastic. I think I look back at, say, high school and college, and I think, oh my gosh, I was so obnoxiously sarcastic. It was so difficult to get out of that. But as I was doing more of my own inner work, I realized, you know, that it's just one more wall for me to hold up, because I wasn't ready for anybody to let anybody in. Like I couldn't figure out what was going on with me. So why would I leave that vulnerable? Why would I leave myself vulnerable? So I had to do this kind of this spiritual work. I don't think I would know that it was spiritual work, but that's what it ended up being. And eventually that sarcasm was like definitely toned down. It was at 11, you know, it was crazy. If I were a guy to try to be a drag queen, I would be probably a really good drag queen. That's the level of sarcasm that was so good. But you know, I would never do that because I hate wearing heels and a dress. So the language that we use will change once we go through these kinds of transitions. Once we sit back and realize, oh my gosh, I am not this person, or I don't want to be this person. And when you get past the I don't want to be, and you realize, you know, well, what is it that I do want to be? And you get over the seeming gap between who you think you want to be and who you are, and you can get there because it's within. It is within. All that is the work of a lifetime. Because it's always changing. It's always something that will. It's always something that will. That will need to come from deep within. Part of this. We are one. Truth, like we all come from one place, and as we all come from the source. So as we break off, and you know, we become in this form, we have different things we're learning about ourselves, but it all comes from the same place. So we have the potential to be like, you know, the, you know, Mother Teresa, or we can be Jeffrey Dahmer. You know, we can be all these different things. And as we look at all the different examples around us, from our own family, from our friends, from our experiences, hopefully there's at least one person who sets a standard for you that you adhere to, that you, not even because you have to, but because it makes sense and it fills you with this, like, yeah, I want to be just like that. Or I think that person is amazing. And I would like to be, you know, that calm or that loving, or that successful and calm and loving, or that helpful. I think there are role models that we can look at and say, yeah, I think that's a good thing to be. Or those are the experiences I want to have. Like if you got somebody who likes to, you know, have these crazy adventures, I think those are things you need to be able to look at. And it's not just from when you're a child, but I think you learn a lot. As a kid, you learn how to cope or how not to cope with things. All that ends up being reflected back inside you. So, and I feel like I'm having to go through this, like do this podcast solo. I still haven't heard from my cousin, so I'm assuming she's like just asleep. this is the first time me doing the show pretty much on my own without having a co-host. But just talking, and I'm still used to having these conversations. So honestly, some of these conversations, some of the stuff that I'm talking about is because of these little images that are being shown to me as I'm talking. And these are, I know from my guides, and it's just, this is something I needed to go through this is like this one podcast. I only got an hour, guys. This is all I want to be able to do. But I wanted to be able to talk about these transitions, and we're always going through them. And I see a lot. I'm in a lot of stuff that I see now has been a way to help me learn and a way to help me understand. Like for me to take these amazing trips with my parents, for me to have the sort of job that I have that allows me the time to do that, helps to alleviate some of the anxiety I have of, you know, what's it going to be like, you know, when my parents go. And it's still hard because my dad's like, you know, I'll probably have a good, you know, 10 years or so. I'm like, well, I hope it's a good 15 years. I hope it's a good 20 years. I hope, you know, I hope that as long as you are feeling good and your body can handle it, then I hope that you're here as long as you want to be here. But it's interesting because my dad will say that, and it's not like this sense of, oh, well, I guess I'll go now. You know, it's, he still has stuff to look forward to, but he's also very aware of, well, I may be tired after about 10 years, you know? And then I look at, you know, I look at my mom who has a lot of different issues with her knees and just ongoing, like it hurts for her to walk. And I can only imagine that if you can't get the kind of, relief to at least be okay to walk, that, yeah, you may not want to be here for much longer, you know, like, or, you know, just looking for relief is maybe more of what the focus is as you get older. It sounds like relief and then also connection, to still feel connected, to still feel relevant. These things I think about, like I'm not big into exercise. I used to be at one point. But I feel like, you know, I don't feel like I'm 48, almost 49. I don't feel that because I don't have a concept of what that means. I look on TV and there's, you know, say Super Bowl, like there's Jennifer Lopez, who's like 50, looks pretty good for 50. Granted, I know she's, you know, lives a superstar life. So, you know, she has a lot of benefits to be able to take care of herself in different ways. But there's a part of me that's also like, well, why do you have to be a superstar to maybe, you know, the looks is a different thing, but to feel really good, I guess is the main thing for me. But I also want to look good. I think it helps. It helps. So for me to go through, and at this age decide, you know, I do want to, feel good, feel strong. And I don't want to think, oh, but it's too late to do that. Because I've seen a lot of people say, ah, I'm too old to do that. Maybe you're too old to go, like, get really physical and do some of the crazy stuff. Like, well, I don't see myself, for example, I don't see myself joining a CrossFit gym anytime soon. But I think there are things that I can be doing, and maybe in these small increments, I will see the benefits of doing that. And there are things that, like, I don't do every day, that I don't consciously do every day, certainly, that I know is part of that package. And, like, meditation is one thing. It's interesting. We talk about meditation a lot. Liz, I know, does it every day. I feel like I end up just falling asleep. So finding some meditations that I can actually stay focused on instead of just slip out into, you know, la-la land, would be nice. And that these are things, body, mind, soul, right? That I want to, I do want to be as vibrant as I can be for as long as I can be, because I also see how people respond when parents see how, when they find out how old my parents are. They're like, what? Your parents are 80, 81. Wow, they look great. Because I've looked, you know, I visited with relatives in the Philippines, and there are relatives that I thought were my uncles, and they are actually my cousins. And in that, they are only 4 years older than I am. So There's one guy. He doesn't look ancient, but he carries himself differently. He's the same. He was born the same year as my brother, who was having a baby for the first time. So, you know, it's an interesting concept for me, because our environment does play a lot. And so to choose to be in a particular environment for a majority of your time, whether that's work or family or whatever, also to choose the type of city you want to be in. Like my friend last night, who was looking at getting out of the city, out of Atlanta, because it's just so crowded and traffic is crazy and all the things that you associate with a big city. Yeah. Even her part, her suburb is really building itself up. And I've noticed it too. I felt this pull to be in a more open area. And she's talking about going to the mountains and finding another smaller town to live in, where there's just a little bit more breathing room. And I can appreciate that. We both want the same thing in terms of, but we still want to have access to this city. And for me, I've got a niece that's coming, and I want to spend as much time as I can, you know, with her. So staying close is important. So you know, having these ties and having that experience is important. So how do we create that? How do we create what we want to be able to experience? And, you know, we can't control everything. There are things that we, creation mode, it's like, okay, well, we're going to do this. We're going to put this together. And then when it's there, it kind of has a life of its own. Sort of like you create a baby, then your baby has a life of its own. All of our creations have other ways of connecting with others. So that's why you never do live on an island. You don't live in this vacuum of it's just me. You can't in your mind do that. I think your mind has a big role to play. But it's difficult if that's all you think, like I'm going to control everything. I think those are some of the loneliest people, because they by choice put up walls and keep out various connections. And then they wonder why they feel so lonely. I've seen that too. And being able to take in when you're open to taking in, knowing when you're not maybe closing down, but maybe just taking a step away, knowing that even that step serves a purpose. But the thing is, like, we are fluid, and we can. It doesn't have to be like a set regimen of, oh, well, this is a year. Well, I'm not going to say anything to anybody. I'm just going to keep to myself, because you may feel that way for whatever reason. But you're never really alone. These connections, people still think about you. If you're like me, you know, you've got people that pray for you. I got a mom who always prays for us. And it's interesting because, you know, when she says it, the way, oh, I'm praying for you, like, oh my gosh, am I messing up that much? You know, you're praying for me. But I know her intention is out of love. I mean, it's based in love. Concern can be love. Worry in a weird way can be love. So I just have to, you know, I'm not going to be able to change her. Like, don't say you're praying for me, because I don't want her to stop, you know. I have a feeling even when she's on the other side, she'll still have these, you know, these connections, and she'll still want the best. It'll just be a different way. So I'm not going to say no, but I'm also going to try to take that in as she wants the best for me and she loves me, and let it go at that, and not try to read too much more into it, because then it ends up getting really messy. Then it ends up being looking around at people like, well, why are you saying that? You know, not trusting the intentions. And also, I want to say that I can trust whatever comes my way, that I can handle it. I can't avoid certain things. I know I can't avoid it, but you know, as much as I could try, but I can. I know I can handle those things. I have the tools to deal with changes. It may not be pretty. In fact, a lot of times it's not very easy or you know, graceful. But what we always end up getting through them somehow. And it may just take a really long time for some of us. But we always end up getting through them. So I feel like the dealing with changes and transition, it's a big conversation to have, or a big monologue to have, or a big podcast to have if it's just me. But like these are concepts I know I'll be talking about with others. I know that we'll be revisiting these because there are a lot of changes that happen in our lives, and you know it isn't about orchestrating and navigating through so you avoid them. But when you are in it, how are you feeling about yourself? Are you being loving about the whole situation with yourself first? Sometimes you have to catch it. Sometimes people will that you maybe have gotten along with fine end up there's tension there. So before we fling out, oh, you've changed. Well, of course people have changed because, we all change. But the core, have they really changed? No. I think how they are expressing themselves, maybe they may be expressing something that you, in order to get your attention, like, hey, no, this is really an issue. And I, I need your part. I need to understand what your part of it is. It's an interesting way of looking at it. Because then it's much more neutral. Like if you were having a bad day for whatever reason, are you going to take it out on everybody else around you? Is it someone else's fault? Now, in my family, while sarcasm still plays a role, we still have it. It's one of our tools we can use. I choose usually not to use it, and definitely not to the levels I did when I was a lot younger. But we also like to use blame. Right. So we have to pay attention, even if we're just joking, it's mom's fault for this, or it's your fault. You chose this woman for your wife. It could be so silly, but I have to catch myself and know that I can't get into repeating that so many times that at some point my brain is like, remember we were blaming, our parents for this, because it can be insidious, right? It can be what seems to be very lighthearted and just as a joke can then become the reality. It becomes the truth for us. And we have to start looking at what are we building and what are we creating with our words? In our stories, what are we creating? What do we say we want to create? And then what are we actually creating? Because these things can be changed and they're going to change. But for us to be consciously aware of what we're doing and what we're saying, that's the mastery that we are working with. And just being aware, like if we're catching ourselves, like, I'm blaming them, but you know what? Like for me, like the example I use has been about, I've got this DNA from my mom. I got this DNA from my dad. So there's a 50-50 chance some of the stuff that they're going through, I'll be just like that. So what am I paving there? What am I, even in the joke, even in just jesting, what am I paving? Because I can see a road being laid out in that direction of blame. And if I'm owning that this is what I have, are you also going to own that? I'll also have knee problems and shoulder problems and skin problems and all these other problems. So we can see how, it's hereditary. Well, is it hereditary part DNA, part environment, part mindset? I know that there are things that we can change. And overall, the big thing is I know that we can heal ourselves. And I know that we can heal ourselves from things that people say there is no cure from. Now, again, I don't have like a formula for it. It's like a from scratch recipe and it takes a lot of experimenting. And a lot of willingness to try, to go beyond what we're being told and what we've taught, what we've been taught, and to have the experiences. This is the basis for what my mentor Lois did to relieve a lot of different things, but mostly to relieve this rheumatoid arthritis. And she was able to do that. She was able to feel, a lot of comfort and to be able to do a lot of things she hadn't been able to do for the years that she suffered from it. Now, it's not like, the joints were unfurled from, the little bit of gnarliness that they had, but the pain associated with that was not there. And we've had other members from her class do things that you think, how did they overcome that? And it's you think it's a miracle, but it is just the allowing of our own soul and our own spirit and our own body to do what it was designed to do. But it needs to have a lot of great positive energy to sustain it. And that does take practice. That doesn't have to be incredibly hard work, but I think it has to take that combination of, like, I'm not going to give up today. Like, I'm going to move it forward today, or I will find peace today. Sometimes it's not even about having to charge it forward and, force it, but it's about allowing. When we talk about these kinds of things, that's why rest is important. It's why the meditations are important, because they do. And maybe that's the whole point. It's like a reminder of, hey, Elisa, if these meditations make you fall asleep, maybe that's the sort of rest you need. So don't stop it. Like, I wouldn't stop it. I know I need to sleep. I need to rest. So those are the ways that life works. And I think we're so used to having like programs and having things be definite, having the recipe, having the answer, having certain things laid out. Like, our need to be in that form and have form and order can sometimes override the mysteries of life that you're not going to be able to account for. So I feel like giving that bit of wonder and loosening up of the rules will help bring in the healing, the joy, the understanding of who we are in this form, in this body, and how we can have such a great effect for ourselves and others around us in the environment that we create. Anyway, I can't believe I actually talked for the whole hour. I know I've got to thank my guides for that. I know Lois is in there too, just sort of egging me on and helping provide the framework for today's podcast. So I appreciate it. And I know, Raven, you were in there and out of there, so I appreciate it. But we are back on Tuesday at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. And I'm hoping everyone's having a great weekend. My parents will be having birthdays in the next few days, or, next 5 days. So I'm looking forward to the new lives and the new years ahead. But everyone have a great weekend. Remember, love originates in self. And we'll talk to you soon. Love you.
Tell me that you love me, yeah. Yeah.